director of the Career Coach on the Forward Watch show. Leadership isn't just about having authority. It's about knowing how to engage, support, and develop your team. But what happens when leaders lack the skills to do this effectively? In this conversation, I sit down with leadership expert Louise Davis, who works with HR teams and operational managers to transform them into confident, people-focused leaders. Louise shares practical tools to help leaders create a culture of feedback, improve retention, and set clear expectations from the start. Plus, we explore how self-awareness and belief systems play a crucial role in leadership effectiveness. If you have ever struggled with giving constructive feedback or wondered how to create a more engaged crew, this episode is packed with insights you won't want to miss. Hello, everyone. Welcome, Louise Davis. Lovely to have you here.
Oh, delightful to be here. Thank you for having me, Corinne.
My pleasure. So a little bit about you. You have a company called Louise Davis Consulting, and you've worked for organizations like Chanel, Nike, Estee Lauder, so the big guns. And yeah, tell us about what is your services and how you're able to really get your clients results. I mean, you're in the same field as me in terms of upskilling and loving the human element that comes with running a team. Obviously, we need to focus on the soft skills. So can you tell us a little bit about you and what you do?
Yeah, thank you. And I think this is the thing where I've always just had this little bit of fascination with human behavior, where I always wonder, why do we do what we do? And how do we get ourselves in such tangles, and how do we detangle? And so that's where, for me, in my work, I work in that sense where, you know how ill-equipped managers, they often, it creates stress for everyone. Everyone feels it. And that's where either disengage teams to, you know, overwhelmed HR. And so what I do is I work with HR leaders to help them, and I go in and develop their technical managers, their operational managers, who are stars at what they do, but how they lead people. And I help to develop them into confident leaders where they've got team members who stay and succeed. And that's where I do it, through my manager to leader method. So, you know, in my, as you would appreciate, I mean, you're working with sort of, you know, sea-based and also, you know, land-based people as well. Mine is land-based, and doesn't matter what, you know, industry, what organisation, the same leadership skills exist. So that's where I go in and do that and help people develop those people skills that balance with their technical competence.
What is the pain factor for leaders if you don't develop your people skills?
Well, the biggest thing that I'm seeing is that it's around retention. So people are leaving. That becomes a bigger issue for, you know, HR in terms of recruiting. But also it's not a HR issue. It's a business issue in terms of knowledge that's leaving the business. And then it's also, you know, the lack of engagement. So what I often find is that three things that are going on for people or for organizations are around the inability for managers to adapt to change in the business, in their teams, and to take their people with them, to be able to have conversations where they're engaging with their team members and building those relationships and having conversations where they understand what makes people tick and what ticks them off, and then they can shape the environment to bring the best out of their team members. And then that allows the third element, which is around collaborate. So how do you have conversations that are robust, even where there's disagreement, but it allows people to flourish and to bring their best work? So they're sort of the key things that I'm seeing. And, you know, when it gets down to it, the crux I see is that it's the lack of and quality of conversations that managers are having with their team members that weaken relationships that then have an impact on declining results. But when they can have better conversations more frequently, then those relationships improve, and that then allows results be better, mm-hmm. which is what organizations are wanting. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
Well, the notable challenges that I see in our industry is the lack of leadership training. You don't need a leadership course to qualify to be a leader and fulfill a leadership role, even though you are working and living with your crew, which I find unfathomable. And the other challenge is the lack of time to have those quality conversations that you're referring to. Mm. So they are flat out 24/7. Mm. And to carve that time to have a meaningful conversation is really, really challenging for them.
Mm.
I guess the only opportunity is performance appraisals, and the industry is not trained in how to deliver those effective performance appraisals. They say it's a simple tick and flick that they get from the yacht management company.
Mm, yeah, and it's sort of an element of, you know, that tick and flick, what's the care factor? It's going through the motions in that sense. And I think just picking up on a point that you were sharing as well, Corinne, is that, you know, this whole thing around leadership, often what I find, you know, here's the myth, you know, that and what sort of gets under my skin as such is that when people are sort of put into leadership roles and are a manager of a team, there is an assumption that they come with this secret download of leadership wisdom, like, oh, well, I'm in the role, I've got the technical expertise, but then somewhere there's an assumption. And even by the managers themselves, they think, oh, I should know how to lead, but they've never been given that opportunity, or they've only got a reference of their past, you know, managers. And that can be good, and that can also be maybe not necessarily the most useful reference that's going on there. So, yeah.
And that's very applicable. A lot of them use their past leaders as references. Mm. Some have the emotional intelligence to go, oh, my gosh, I never want to be like them. And others, unfortunately, follow in their footsteps. Mm. So, Louise, we are very fortunate to have you back in the membership. You previously spoke about how to have a difficult conversation, and I have previously interviewed you on Yachting International Radio, and we had some really good laughs. So you're back in the membership to talk about feedback. The reason why I have headhunted you back in the membership.
Glad to be back.
Yeah, you're so skilled at it and you're so knowledgeable in this area. And what crew struggle with that I've discovered in the leadership course is actually delivering that feedback. They are afraid of upsetting their team members or the ripple effect. And a lot of them, it's connected to not wanting to cause conflict. So they're scared that if they give this feedback, it's going to create more issues. And I think we both know that's not the case. Mm. If you leave it, it's likely to go even more sour or south. Mm. So what are your thoughts around that?
Yeah, it's interesting because I think what happens is that the fear is normal. Like, we shouldn't be afraid of that. But I want to make that distinction because putting off the conversation means that we're actually going to be heading into the difficult conversation scenario. That's where we head. So I like to think about it, and the analogy I use, and I'll talk about this in our session later this week, is it's a bit like when we're kids, we're told by our parents and our carers and our dentists that we need to clean our teeth twice a day, mm-hmm. right? And so the question is, well, why is that? Why do we need to, you know, get into that? And we now, you know, ideally as adults, you know, we just do it. But the reason why is because it's all around, it's a preventative action. So what it does is it maintains healthy gums, teeth, prevents cavities, all that sort of stuff. If we don't clean our teeth, if we're not flossing and doing all that sort of stuff, then, you know, we're going to see that it becomes more painful and more expensive because we have to have dental work done. And in the same way, it's a bit like feedback, which is if I have those, brief, short conversations that allow me to be able to help someone improve in their role, or someone allows me to be able to improve in my role, then that's like brushing my teeth. But if I'm not brushing my teeth, then what happens is it's going to be, you know, more difficult. And this is where, from a team relationship point of view, feedback is that sort of preventative hygiene factor. If we're not doing that, we're going to end up in the world of difficult conversations, and people fear that. But I think it's a culture of feedback and understanding that feedback it works both ways in terms of being positive and also corrective. People often talk about it as being negative, and I think that's where it gets blurred between, you know, negative feedback versus criticism. And criticism is very much focusing on the past and, you know, and often more personalized, whereas feedback really, I mean, I've heard people use the term feed forward, because it's all around.
I love that word. We use it too.
Yeah. So it's all around, here's what happened. That was in the past. But now it's around, how do we move forward? How do you improve going forward? And that's that thing where often what I find, and again, I'll talk about this in our session in more detail, but there are three things that I think that hold people back from having the feedback conversations. And that is where there's that fear of fallout. You know, they think, oh, I'm going to stuff the relationship up. I'm going to make it worse. Who am I to give feedback? They question their own authority, you know, all of that sort of stuff. They miss the timing, and so it's too far from when the incident happened. So there's that element. But it's also where they get defensive, and so they hold on to their position and they get a little bit judgmental and a bit righteous and sort of like, well, I think I did a great job. They're not open to hearing how they can improve. And then the third element is that they wing it, and they don't have a structure for the conversation or a framework. And so when you can flip it around, then you're in a better position to be able to do it. And it's, you know, you mentioned before about the performance reviews when they happen sort of half yearly, end of year. And people, in my experience, if there have been no conversations or very few conversations, then people are hesitant, they're reluctant, they kind of, it's, you know, another dental analogy, it's like going in, getting a, you know, a tooth pulled, to where you think, oh God, you know, this is, you know, agonizing. And they go through the process, it's a bit clunky, but often it might not necessarily even get taken on board. But the thing about this is, if there's regular conversations going on, those feedback conversations, and feedback conversations are things that just, you know, like, they're sideline conversations. They're things in the moment, which is, I noticed this, or let's talk about what just happened. And those conversations, like, they're just little gold gems, little nuggets, you know, that you can have. They don't have to be long, sit down, let's do that. It's in the moment, which, you know, then allows, when the performance management or performance review conversations come around, there really shouldn't be any surprises.
Yeah, to give them an opportunity to work on what they need to work on based on the feedback.
Yeah.
Share a real life example. I've got a 19-year-old au pair that just started with us in her probation period, and I was like, I really need to call a reference. I should have done it before she started, but hey, ran out of time. I did it. The first line that this woman told me was, I'm so happy you called. She is awful. And then she went on to tell me, like, all the challenges she's had with this particular individual. Said, I don't think she loves children. Her priorities are elsewhere. And I thought, oh, no, it kind of confirmed what I was thinking.
Yeah.
And I gave her the feedback. I didn't say she was awful, but I was very honest with her with everything else. And I think in my 20s or 30s, I would have been petrified to do that because I don't want to hurt her feelings. But how I framed it was on the feed forward model, and said, look, it's going to be very difficult for you to find work with a bad reference. I'm happy to work with you so that we can get you to where you need to be. And then we can have a chat in 2 weeks to see how it's going for both of us.
Yeah.
And she's completely changed. She's more willing. She's more aware, I guess, of her actions. And obviously, when she first heard that feedback, she was teary and emotional. And as a 19-year-old, I can only imagine, because you're not taught this at school.
No, not at all. And I think this is the thing. It's a perfect example, because what happens is that we see the behavior, but we don't give the feedback. And so we get upset about it and go, oh, God, now I've made a bad decision, this, that, and the other. But the opportunity to have that feed forward conversation And to say and get clear around the expectations so that then she goes, oh, because otherwise she thinks she's doing a great job. She has no reference of, I don't know if I'm being bad, if I'm being awful. And that opportunity to then have that conversation, set the expectations or recalibrate and what those expectations are and what's expected. And then she can move forward. It's like, okay, now I can improve. If she doesn't want to do that, then she's got the option to self-select and, you know, see you later. Thanks very much. But I think the honest feedback and the emotion that comes with it, that's normal. People often go, I don't want to upset people. I'm like, well, getting upset is a normal human experience. So you can't avoid the upset. And that is a way of them being able to go, okay, well, how do I take that on board? And then be able to go, all right, this is what I need to do. It's the emotional experience is a temporary one. And it allows people to be able to get informed by their emotions and say, okay, so how do I reset? And there's a whole lot of research around as well with feedback is that people, I think it's like 72% of people said that they would improve their performance if they were given corrective feedback more often. I mean, wow, you know.
Yeah, that's very interesting that you said that, because in these HR surveys I do, the number one driver that all the crew are saying as a driver of motivation, it's not money, it's feedback.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, let's tap into that part around how do we help people get better? Mm-hmm. And, you know, now the flip on that is that often where people get defensive about, you know, receiving feedback or, and I read an interesting thing, which is a study that's been done, and it was coming through from the Center of Creative Leadership. And they talked about the fact that what often happens is that there is this, it's called the above average effect. So often what happens is people think, they go, oh, you know, I'm good at, you know, I'm a great driver. I'm great, you know, like I love the way I dress, and I'm great at my work, you know. And I've had this experience with my two teenagers who have both got their driver's licenses. And as they were going through their learning, the learner phase, and then into their P plates, they're just like, I'm such a great driver. I'm such a great driver. And I'm like, there's nothing about being a great driver. It's about being a safe driver. And I had to sort of just this whole above average effect. Now, the thing about this that they talk about in this research is that it has a positive effect, because it protects people against depression and it promotes well-being. The problem with it, though, is that it can then cause people to be resistant around being open to feedback and how they can improve. So it's just it's being aware of that. And so then it's around, from a leadership point of view, how do we set up a culture where we're giving each other feedback? And it's not a one-way feedback, it's a two-way feedback. So how does the leader keep improving, and how does the team member keep improving, the crew member keep improving? Yeah.
I know you've got experience and qualifications in NLP, and I want to link it to belief systems because it's something that you work with as well. Mm. So when you are developing a culture of feedback, I think it's so pivotal for both leaders and, let's say, juniors to understand self and why we get upset and what is that connected to. Mm. Because largely it stems from a belief system. So it's all good and well to have a structure or framework to work with, but I think it has to come with understanding self as well in order to get the outcome that you're looking for.
Absolutely. That self-awareness piece is critical. And there's a saying that I was taught, and that in this situation. So, you know, like sometimes getting feedback can sting. It's like you go, I didn't see that coming. Oof, you know. And we can get defensive. There's a saying which is, my opinion is worthless if that is all I've got. I need to have at least three different opinions or perspectives in order to gain wisdom. And so what that means is I think about it in terms of, I've got me as first position. This is my experience. This is what I did. And so I think about how I was, you know, in a situation, behaving, performing. And then allowing myself to just let go of the righteousness and then to be curious and to say, well, I wonder what it would be like if I stepped into the other person's perspective. So position two, which is either my leader or my crew member, and to see the world through their eyes in terms of that interaction or that situation that happened. And it's not as easy as it sounds because we can hold on to our righteousness, but just for a moment, just to be able to be curious and go, oh, that's interesting. That might have been their perspective. I wouldn't have caught that. And then from that, being able to step into what's called the third position, the meta perspective or the neutral perspective, to be able to look at the, you know, position one, which was me looking at myself and looking at the person I was having an interaction with or where the gap is, and to be able to just be a witness to it. And that brings another level of intel. And so from there, from position three, I can come back into my perspective and go, all right, how is my view now expanded and how does that help me as I go forward? And that's the self-awareness that goes on, which is, okay, either I'm holding my position or I'm actually been expanded and I can see, and this is where we can start to shift the conversation.
Yeah.
And how I can improve.
Very interesting. Okay. So I want to give you a real life example scenario and see what tools you can bring out of your toolbox to assist with this feedback conversation. Okay, so growing up in South Africa, we got a lot of South Africans in our industry, and we were very privileged to have help around the house. So the chances of you unpacking the dishwasher, washing your clothes, ironing your clothes is quite minimal. Mm-hmm. So you enter the industry, and now you've got to think for yourself. Mm-hmm. And there's a communal space called a crew mess where you all eat together and you pack away your dishes in the dishwasher and it needs to be unpacked. Sometimes someone's assigned duties to do that, but maybe on some vessels they're not. In this case, there isn't. So there's a crew member who is sitting in the crew mess, not on his phone, let's say, and the leader is unpacking the dishwasher. And we spoke about expectations earlier. And I think as leaders, we don't communicate our expectations enough. So the leader is thinking, why the F am I doing this? He should be doing it. He's just on his phone. I've got shit to do. Mm. So how should that leader frame her conversation without showing her frustration?
Mm. I had the same challenge with my teammates. There's a dishwasher, or here's the sink, like, and the dishwasher's here. You know, don't dump on the sink into the dishwasher and unpack it. I get it. I think it comes back to, so there's different things there, which is firstly, it comes back to expectations. I also think it steps back to a broader thing, which is when people come on board or when they start working as a team, that those expectations around how we work together are set up clearly. So if that's being missed, from that person who's sitting on their phone, they're just sort of thinking, well, this is my life. This is as I know it. I'm unaware. And so the awareness piece needs to come in there, where it's like all hands on deck. Everyone is, involved. We all contribute. Mm-hmm. Regardless of what your cultural experience is, this is how it works. And the reasons why it's important. And often what happens is, I think people say this is what's expected, but they don't give the context for underneath in terms of this is why. And if that's not given, then it could be where people go, well, I get that, but that's not what I do. That cultural piece is misunderstood. And so I think that there is a part there which is get really clear expectations. And then this is where, if it's not being done by that crew member over a period of time, then that becomes a conversation. But it's also just these reminders before that, which is actually, come on, this is what we do. This is part of your role. Everyone, it makes, you're not a guest.
Yeah.
You're a crew member. We all pitch in.
But that links into the conversation we had about preventative measures. So as part of your onboarding strategy, very important to articulate what the culture is like on board.
Right.
I know that it's not done in our industry because I provide the education on it, but many people don't know about it, but it's something that is not considered. They don't know generally what are values, what is culture, what is, how do you create a vision and a mission? And those are the all foundations of building a strong team and leadership.
Yeah, I think so. And I think what happens is that, you know, if in that scenario that you're sharing, you know, the leader is emptying the dishwasher, watching a crew member just, you know, flick through socials, and they're having an internal dialogue going, what the hell am I doing this? Like, you know, da, da, da. And so they're getting themselves worked up unnecessarily without thinking about, I wonder what's going on for this person in terms of why are they not stepping up to do this? What's the piece that's missing in their thinking where they should be going, actually, I need to be on that. And that's the gap that needs to be filled. But what happens is that dialogue that's going on for the leader, they're getting themselves ramped up. So then when they do have the conversation, it's emotionally charged as opposed to, let me just remind you that when this happens, this is the expectation, this is why I need to see you be able to pick up on it. So, and to be able to understand what's going on that's stopping you from just getting in there. This is what we need to do.
Yeah, and I think that's your role as a leader to find out the answer to that question.
Yeah.
You mentioned you will help managers to become leaders.
Mm.
Can you please tell me the difference between a manager and a leader? Because I feel like a manager would be someone who wouldn't consider the needs of the other person. It's just meeting their end goal. So instead of asking what is going on for this individual, how can I close that learning gap in order for us to arrive at the same expectation?
Mm-hmm. So I think that the manager leader thing, I mean, you could go Google it and there are a gazillion searches that come up on this. I think about it in the context where a manager is someone who's got the technical expertise. They may not necessarily be leading a team, but they may be influencing without authority in that sense. And a leader is someone who's who could be a manager and they've got leadership skills and they know how to work with people. But you can also have a leader who is a crew member who knows how to work people, who knows how to be able to connect and influence in that sense. And so I think that in that whole manager to leader, it's manager to leader, leader to manager, because in some roles, this is where they've got a foot in both camps. They've got a technical operational piece, but they've also got the people side of things. And what I see is there's often an imbalance where it's the technical operational expertise and then they're having to sort of try and figure out what the people stuff is, and they're doing the best that they possibly can. And often they're flagging, they're failing in that sense, and it can be very discouraging. But just having some structures around how to lead conversations or to pick up on stuff, then it can make all the difference, where it's like, oh, now I understand what's going on with that person. There's that whole thing of coming back to, you know, setting the expectations before we start, because often what I've found, and this comes out of a book from Michael Bungay Stania, great, he's an Australian guy, he's based in Canada. And his book that he wrote over a year ago now, called How to Work With, in brackets, Almost Anyone.
Mm.
He talks about the fact that when we come together and start working as a team, and so this would be appropriate as a crew, is that there can be that sort of getting to know each other type of thing that goes on, but it's often quite light touch, and then we get into doing the work. So we're getting the boat, you know, ready, and then we've got guests on board. But in that time, that's where we start actually working with each other and figuring each other out. And then we're working with people who start to push our buttons or who aren't emptying the dishwasher. And we go, what the hell? You know, what's going on? And so this is where the conversation that happens beforehand, which is how do we work with each other, happens. Because otherwise what's going on is we're sort of crossing our fingers and hoping it's going to work out. And then, you know, that's where it can get sort of, the friction and the fractionating can go on, and it just doesn't become enjoyable. And then you're in close proximity with each other, and you're trying to keep yourself tidy. So, yeah. And I just wanted to add one other thing in there, Corinne, as well, about the leaders aren't having the conversations, is that when people know the skills and they're not having the conversations, then they lose the right to whinge. You know, it's like if you know what you need to do, then have those conversations, have those feedback, you know, conversations early, seek feedback, because otherwise what happens is, you know, it just, you know better. But if people don't know better, then this is where people get reactive and they, they lose the ability to be able to respond and be more solution oriented. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Maurice, thank you so much. I love talking to you. I can talk to you. I'm so passionate about this subject. Thank you so much. And before you go, two questions. What are the gold nuggets you're going to share on Thursday, and how can people find you?
Yeah. So if I give you two, it's I am going to invite people to what I find people go into, oh, should I have that conversation? So it's all should we talk? But it's a should we talk internal. It's like a bubble conversation that I'm having with myself, not with anyone else. And I'm going to give people a tool, a framework to move from should we talk to glad we talked, and that it is a four-step framework that anyone can use either to give or receive feedback that just expands conversations. Now, it's, you know, there's lots of feedback structures out there. I've just found this one conversationally very easy to remember and use, and it just opens up my world.
So, yeah. Amazing. Fantastic. And so then
you want that? Be there.
Yeah, absolutely. And then how can people find you, Louise?
They can find me in my Louise Davis, www.louisedavisconsulting.com. My website's about to get a little refresh, a bit of restyling, and also at Manager to Leader Method. So just having a little bit of a on Instagram. So that's where we're there, or on LinkedIn.